Community Conversations with Community Centres SA. Here's Kerry Ackermans.
Everyone's been talking about the housing crisis, in fact, not just in Australia, but across the world. And it's impacting here in South Australia. I'd be very fortunate to be talking to Emma Slape, Chief Executive Officer of Turner Real Estate today. They both sell as well as have property managers. And she's going to share her insights on what's happened with the latest tenancy laws, as well as where we're at with the housing crisis and what some of the options might be. Emma, I think you'd need to be living under a rock if you didn't know about the housing crisis, which was why I was very keen to get you back in, as I know you were part of a big forum last year around the housing rental crisis, and I'm keen to see what's happened from there, but also talk about the new tenancy laws, what that will mean, and really what you're seeing in the marketplace. So let's take, first of all, the forum you were a part of last year. What came out of that that you were hoping would happen that hasn't happened, and has anything happened?
Well, I suppose that's a pretty broad question, Kerry, so I might break it down into a couple of things. Definitely the housing forum was a sort of general opportunity to get involved and put feedback into rental reforms, which we're going to touch on a little there. So a fair bit has happened in that space, and we've just seen new tenancy laws introduced at the start of July. I think some of the more broader issues, though, that we were talking about was seeing a bit more equity in the private rental market as well, when we're talking about private landlords and sort of bringing up standards there and ensuring that landlords that are doing that as private landlords are well educated around the laws. So there have been some interesting changes there that hopefully we can track over long terms. I think a really clear message at those forums was that people that are particularly in shared accommodation in rooming houses were feeling that they were quite vulnerable. They were getting bills for utilities that perhaps weren't justified, and they were finding it hard to kind of get a grasp of whether they were living in a fair environment. So we've seen some changes there, which I think are really positive.
Can I ask how they're going to control that? That's an interesting question.
Well, I would like to know the answer probably to that as well, Kerry. I mean, it would come under Consumer and Business Services, and the message to real estate agents and the public has been that there will be resources put into compliance around that. So we would definitely like to see that. So I guess if there's a register of private landlords, or whether investigations see whether they're registered and or have undertaken training, would definitely be my suggestions on what would make meaningful changes in that small but important sector for often the most vulnerable.
So the forum was around the changes in the tenancy laws. It wasn't actually addressing the housing crisis, there not being enough homes.
It was a bit of both, really. I think it's hard to separate them both in many ways. A lot of the talk was around housing supply, and we have started to see the government put out some announcements around that. But timing is such a big factor, and I think we're keen to sort of see some more interim measures as much as possible. There was a lot of talk around Airbnbs and sort of short stay accommodation, but interstate there's been some movement where there's been some taxes imposed on that, but not so much in South Australia. As an agency, I'd be keen to see sort of more data around that. I think it's probably less prevalent in Adelaide and the suburbs than, say, Melbourne. But again, if we're able to provide a couple of hundred more houses, that's really valuable for those that would occupy them.
Well, I've got quite a lot of experience in the short stay market, ran a business within that. And my comments to it from a personal perspective is a lot of people are offering up spaces that are not, would not be available permanently. They're either moving out, it's their own home. For the ones that are investment, that's minimal, but it's only because they're getting their return, and with the increased mortgage rates, they need that return to keep the property. If they don't, they'll sell the property and it therefore isn't a rental. So I don't actually think that attacking that Airbnb short stay side is necessarily, it's a bit like they're easy to pick on.
Well, more so I think there's probably opportunity to say, can it be utilised at different times to give those owners a return and actually provide some sort of medium stay accommodation for 6 months of the year. Is that an option?
It certainly may be. I agree. It could be like a respite or an emergency. So we're not thinking about it in a smarter way. And of course, with the short stay as well, it's in Adelaide very much geared to events.
Yes.
So if we don't have the short stay, where are these people going to stay? Mm, we can't afford, we are getting more hotels built, but they won't hold the people. So we can't have gather round and all these other big events coming if we don't have somewhere to stay. So we'll park that. And I guess you can say that's a personal bias, but I do understand people thinking, yes, that's impacting on the housing market, but there is so much more impacting
so
on the housing market.
Yeah.
And we've had 730,000 immigrants come into the country in a year.
Yeah, when you start to see those
that
numbers on paper.
That is a phenomenal sum of people. So you would be seeing that in demand at rental inspections, where we've had lineups. Never used to have lineups. You have a few people, but not lineups.
Yeah, and definitely in anything in the more affordable part of the market, we're seeing very strong demand. Interestingly, we're seeing properties sort of over that $700-$800 a week mark in a lot of suburbs starting to sit there for a bit longer, which is fair enough. Everybody has to, sort of work within their means. And I think we're really starting to see that end, the demand dry up. Are those people buying their own homes? Are they living in perhaps more traditional affluent suburbs rather than perhaps, 10Ks out of the city? So it's interesting, the different pockets. We're seeing very different circumstances. But number one shortage is family homes, from anything of sort of like a two-bedroom freestanding home through to four or five bedrooms, strong demand in that housing type, absolutely.
And has there been a flow on to units? Because you mentioned two-bedroom, a lot of units are two and three-bedroom, that now their rental rates have gone up?
Yeah, for a couple of reasons, actually, and that's an interesting one. You've been in real estate for a long time, as have I, Kerry, and you'd know that quite often, sort of 20 years ago, a nice two-bedroom unit was a great first investment for people, and it was usually an investment property. With the price of properties now, we're very much seeing owner-occupiers take them as their first home and live in those. So whilst that's sort of a stretch for them to still be purchasing something, usually well over $500,000, they're in the housing market. But the flow-on effect of that is one less rental property as well. So whilst it's helping one side, it's hurting the other because we just don't have that supply, as you alluded to.
And have you seen the gap diminish between a two-bedroom unit and a two-bedroom house? Whereas once that would have been, or a three, it would have been quite a reasonable gap, whereas now the unit rental prices have gone up?
Not as much. There's still distinctly, you could nearly tell on paper whether we're looking at a unit without looking at the address compared to a property. And I think that's probably because there's also a lot more unit types around as well. So often you'll see a unit group with a lot more units than traditionally would have been built in the 60s and 70s. And a lot of it just comes down to affordability and location still. So it's a changing market. People are prepared to sacrifice that larger block and that larger living area and everything that goes with what we would see as a house to get into the housing market. And that's understandable.
Yes, of course. Now, Adelaide's often had its big quarter acre block that no one really uses as much these days. And I remember talking to the Minister Nick Champion about granny flats, whereas in every other state pretty much you could have a granny flat, but here you couldn't rent it out, which seemed crazy. Now those laws have changed because they're not only granny flats, but also people have in large houses can have rooms for rent.
Yes, yeah. I think that'll be an interesting one to see how it plays out. Over the years, there have been many sort of granny flats built largely for family occupation, I suppose alluding to the name, and even as time's gone on.
It's a terrible name, really, when you think about this day and age, the poor granny stuck
That's
out
That's right. A grandpa might have lived in one of them.
Exactly.
But they tend to sort of stay within that family unit. Perhaps the teenager either elects to move out there or they get put out there. I have a teenager, so I'm not sure which one I would say on any given day. But the opportunity to use it as rental accommodation, I think, will be an interesting one to watch. And for people that are getting older with limited income, I think it's a great opportunity to solve two problems. And other people will prefer to sit on it and will need active encouragement to perhaps even raise awareness that that's available. And I guess that's an opportunity for the private sector to kind of focus on a bit more as well. Again, like you say, it's one piece of the puzzle. It's not the answer, but it's a valuable piece when it provides real housing and meaningful housing for people that need it.
Well, I'm talking to Emma Slape, Chief Executive Officer of Turner Real Estate, today about housing. Emma, what about the commercial sector? I look at a lot of commercial properties that are sitting empty. I look at a lot of commercial properties that could be repurposed even for some respite housing. Every office has lounge, kitchen, waiting area, bathrooms and all of these offices. I know that often the problem is, though, is the retrofit, but we need houses. Is that a possibility to look for rooms?
Funnily enough, I had this argument with my 96-year-old grandma the other day, and she was saying, all these buildings in the city. And I said, Nan, absolutely. I think there's an opportunity there. But it's going to be a matter of what buildings fit. Sort of a large commercial building with massive floorage but only toilets on one floor is not really going to be practical, and I could see that could create some other social housing problems in density as well. But there is a lot of older buildings that may have even been converted from old cottages, particularly around sort of the Norwood, Unley areas.
Exactly, and they have, it's perfect. They would have had bedrooms once.
Exactly.
And people just aren't using the space with the work from home. Most employees would rather work from home than be in the office. So a lot of these offices have empty areas.
Yeah, yeah. And I think they should be the target. I think a lot of the chatter has been around the big empty buildings in the city, and I could see how they could be a real challenge. But if you take that out to look at the old villas in the outskirts of just the city area, I think that there really could be some solutions there. So there's probably a role for local government as well to look at whether the approvals are there, and also whether sort of the current fit of it could be sustainable for long or medium term. Probably has to be pretty clear, I think, whether it's going to be a long-term solution or a medium-term solution too. Because as we all know, as owners, and the cost of retrofitting anything is not cheap. And we also
don't... even getting it done. You can't find a trade.
Well, that's right. Yeah, that's another
challenge.
They're
all on holidays because they earn so much money.
But I suppose, like, for an owner to input that money, well, what's going to be the return? And they want the security that it's not going to be a grant that, you know, comes and goes for 3 years and then they have to turn it back to commercial. So what is sort of the long-term future, and does that change the shape of the local suburbs? Maybe yes, and maybe in a positive way.
But we do need to look at all of these options. And do you remember the scheme where they had NRAS, where you could build the home and then you had to have it at a subsidised rent?
Yeah.
That all got disbanded. What happened with that?
Well, we actually manage a property of NRAS portfolio, so it is something that I've got a lot of experience with. The program was only ever set up for 10 years, and unfortunately over the last few years is when those properties have come out. So the last of most of the NRAS properties, both in South Australia and nationally, will exit the scheme by the end of next year. Probably 60 to 70% have already exited. And whilst it definitely created housing in specific demand areas, and they were new builds, so it was creating new housing, what we saw is that the investors largely that got involved in that scheme did it for a financial reason. And unfortunately, at the end of the scheme, a lot have sold. So we had about 400 properties within the NRAS portfolio, and nearly half of those sold at the 10-year point. So those, of course, it's still 200 more than perhaps before, but there wasn't a great amount of foresight to encourage people to remain in that investment type, which is perhaps an opportunity lost. I think what it does show... I could write a thesis on NRAS, so you got me on a on a personal subject here. But I think what it does show is that there is an appetite from the private sector to be willing to invest in housing. Also, what it does show is that they want a financial carrot, but how can we make that better balanced? Because, of course, investors invest for long-term financial security. We understand that. But I think also understanding what they're providing and having a long-term view on that. At the time, 10 years seemed like a long time, and it actually came about the end of the 10 years at the worst possible time.
So there wasn't a review that it would continue or that they'd rebuild houses?
No.
Do you see a benefit in another scheme or a similar scheme to that?
I see a benefit. If there is private investment to create housing, yes. I know that's a very general statement, but I think we have to be careful about who we encourage into it and for what reasons.
And it was a house built with subsidised rent as a form of social housing, just so people
are clear
on how it worked.
Yes, and they got a very generous tax incentive at the end of each financial year. So the rent was capped at about 80% of market rent, and that was only reviewed once every 3 years. Mm-hmm. So also for those that had stayed in the properties and for the investors that kept it, the gap was pretty big. So if we've got a property coming out now and the rent was set 3 years ago at 80%, some people have sort of had like been told that their rent may be $200 a week more.
That's really interesting you say that, because I spoke to someone the other day who $250 increase, but the landlord's now brought it back to $150. I mean, that's significant amounts. I mean,
it
in
is.
My day, you couldn't rent if it was more than 33% of your income. Well, now some people are looking at 70%.
Yeah. It's a pretty large number.
So have those rules changed for you as an agent now? You must have had to change your criteria to a degree.
Yeah, so I suppose less and less the focus on sort of that third of your income is a focus. It's still definitely the number one thing that people look for, but in more affordable areas, that's not possible with everybody. So I think there's a bit more leniency around that. And a lot of people work really, really hard to pay their rent on time, even though they're in financial hardship. And I think that's a really important message as well. But yeah, it's hard, and the prices around rental increases is more than what inflation has been more generally, and also wages. So people are struggling in that area. The new tenancy laws have lots of sort of broad words like reasonable and proportional.
Don't you love those words? Let's talk about those new tenancy laws.
Yeah.
Reasonable and proportional.
Mm. Yeah. So a tenant can challenge an increase if they don't see it as reasonable. So that would be reflective of other similar rentals in similar areas would sort of be how they define that. But proportional is an interesting one because potentially a landlord that had the capacity to be extremely generous, and we have quite a lot of those, I might add, perhaps the tenant's been there for 10 years plus, they've kept the property really well, and the landlord's always said, look, let's just do, you know, X instead of Y. And they get to a point where perhaps they've even, you know, had to, they've passed away and a family member's inherited the property and they've got a mortgage and they need to bring it up to rental rates. It's questionable whether that proportional rate would now apply because we might be talking about a 30% increase. Mm. I mean, it's hard for both parties, but these are things that unfortunately will have to be tested in the tribunal to see what reasonable and proportional means.
And the tribunal is always a very interesting place. I have to say, Emma, that I always felt that it erred on the side of the tenant, but perhaps that was...
I think that many agents
cynicism.
And landlords would agree with you there, but perhaps tenants would too.
Well, yes, that's very true. Well, it always seemed to me you'd have fantastic tenants often with difficult landlords and difficult tenants with great landlords. Mm. It's hard to find that great marriage. Emma, just on the increases and obviously getting into the tribunal, the issue will be how they're going to get cases heard. It was hard enough to get the tribunal to have enough time. They're now flooded with, it's been unfair for my rental increase.
Absolutely. Question that we're asking is
have they put more resources into that to handle it?
Not that we've seen so far.
Interesting. So the other tenancy law changes around being able to have pets and end of lease, can you talk about those?
Yeah. So I think definitely something that we were expecting was that pets can be allowed in rentals. It's important to understand what that means though. So it really gives the tenant the opportunity to request a pet. A tenant can't simply say, hey Emma, guess what? I bought a golden retriever puppy on the weekend. Tell my landlord, Kerry, that he now lives with me. The process is a little different to that. And as an owner, they do still have some say. So the tenant needs to apply to the owner or the agent and request that permission. Then the owner has to, of course, give a fairly expeditious yes or no. There are some reasons that you could say no, such as that property is not suitable for a puppy in a one-bedroom unit with no backyard, and those things can be considered. And if the tenant is unhappy with that decision, the burden is on them to take it to the tribunal. So strata properties have another step in there because stratas often have the ability to make a decision as a strata whether a pet is allowed. So the process would be to make the request. The owner will say whether they were comfortable, yes or no, and then it would go to the strata. So a little bit clunky, but I think the good part is that people will need to think carefully still whether they get a pet, and if so, how they're going to manage the pet in the household. And all agencies would be strongly encouraged, and we have already implemented a new pet agreement. So we've always had one if pets have been approved, but really clear parameters on what we expect people to do.
It doesn't mean they can come in and damage the property.
Correct. Mm. No, but making sure that they pick up any pet waste, that they are restraining the animal at inspections, particularly if it's a pet that somebody may be frightened of. Interestingly, a lot of people are frightened of snakes, not dogs, Kerry. So.
There you go. Well, a couple of stories. I do remember a renter bringing in a snake in a bag. Thought they'd be helpful rather than sending out the snake collector. So you can imagine the real estate office with the snake being dropped on the desk. And just talking about pets is when it wasn't allowed and going to do an inspection and there was a tray of kitty litter and the tenant assuring us that there was nobody using the kitty litter. I said, oh, I'm just interested why you'd have kitty litter then.
Yes. or the dog bowls in the second drawer. That's right. So I think we'll definitely see a bit of change there, and there'll be a bit of give and take with that as well. But as always, if tenants do the right thing, usually the owners, you know, can work with them. So there's responsibility on both sides there.
And what's happening now with trades being so hard to get, Emma? Because I know the holdups we used to have trying to get people in, it must be really challenging.
Yeah, we definitely haven't seen a big change in that. I would say that it's slightly improved, unfortunately, with some of the building companies in trouble in the last sort of 12 months. That's created a few more tradies here or there. But it's still, you know, several days wait for anything that's definitely not an emergency. And we're also seeing trades, the price of their labour is a yeah. lot more as well. And that's a sign of the times as well. And a reality for owners that they have to be aware of is that the cost of housing going up, and so is the cost of maintaining housing.
I do recall an incident of an older tenant who sent a letter saying, could you please ask the landlord not to put the rent up, because the tenant had learnt to shave in the dark in the bathroom and that was okay. Peter's laughing, our producer here. And the landlord, who also, when the tenant complained about the smoke alarm beeping, just said, just give them a broom handle. That's what I do, and tap it. There are some great stories.
Absolutely. Some that are not for radio today.
No, and I presume you haven't nailed the possum problem that none of us can ever. What can you do?
Or bees.
Oh, bees.
Mm, okay. Yeah, it's very hard to get rid of bees. You can get the bee catcher, but they normally come back if they're really keen on your home. So.
Of course. Now, Emma, end of lease. What's happening now with the laws around end of lease?
Yeah, this is quite a significant change, and we've seen it interstate, and it's in South Australia now as well. So a tenancy term still exists, but previously, if the owner was unhappy with a tenant, or they wanted to sell the property and they wanted to offer it with vacant possession, or any reason really, they could choose not to renew that lease and give the tenant, of course, appropriate notice that that's going to occur. Under the new laws, essentially tenants will be offered the right of a renewal, or it will lapse into a periodic tenancy unless there are specific grounds. So some of those grounds may be that the owner needs to move into their property themselves, or an immediate family member does. They need to undertake major renovations. Perhaps the tenant has been constantly in arrears and they've been breached, or they've been conducting illegal activities or something like that. They're all valid reasons, but it is tricky if a landlord, particularly we're seeing older landlords, they've held the property for a long time. They're now in retirement phase. The plan has always been to divest that asset. And a lot of the time, it would be great for an owner-occupier as well as an investor. So they want to keep those options open. And right now, if the tenant refuses to move out, we can't enforce them moving out, and they would have to sell that property with that tenant in situ.
And when you think about that, that then also puts off investors buying.
I think it does. Yeah. And people might get to the end of the tenancy and the tenant's moved out. It might have been a great tenancy, but they go, hey, I'm not going to risk it one more time. I'm going to sell it now while the property's vacant.
Exactly. So, and I'll be interested to see how the tribunal handles these matters, because when you talk about being in arrears, the tribunal's very forgiving. I have seen them get somebody pay a dollar a week for a $900 water bill.
It's going to take a while.
That is not sustainable.
Yeah.
And we were talking about water before with the new housing right out north. I mean, great, they've got the land, but no water infrastructure, and all our water's going to go up because of that. So if a tenant gets in arrears over water as well, which is difficult to control. So it's a complex piece, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is. And I've said to my team, and I know that they work really hard on that, is the best skill that we bring to the table for owners is our negotiation skills. And a lot of times a tenant will say, hey, I don't want to go through the opens. If they're going to sell anyway, I'm happy to move out, and the tenancy ends really well. And that's still going to happen too. But we're talking about those situations where the tenant is actually damaging the property, or not looking at after it well for inspections. And that's actually having a material impact on the investor's long-term return. And as an investor, that's why they have got into it. Yes, there's other complexities, but at that point in time, money's important to them. So.
And of course, they're being hit by mortgage rate increases.
Correct.
Which is the blunt instrument we're currently using for inflation.
Yep.
When a third of people don't have a mortgage, a third of people are renting, mm-hmm. then there's only that third with mortgages.
That's right. That's right. And we're definitely seeing the pressure from owners around that as well. And of course, tenants, but it goes both ways, yes.
So, Emma, if you were giving some advice to a tenant out there and then to a landlord, what would the advice be to a tenant?
Well, there's been a few changes around applications as well, and that the agency is a little more limited in what they can ask for. But I see that as a great opportunity for the tenant to be able to offer a bit more. So if you're able to tell a bit more of a story, why you want to live in the property, if you've got a pet, how you look after that pet, all of those things just create a bit more of a personal connection, and it might help you stand out in an application. Also making sure that your referees know that they're referees, so when they get a call, they answer it. If you're able to provide additional documentation to show that you're always on time with your rent, a rent ledger should always be available from an agency, and a good agency will always offer that. So include those types of things to really show, as soon as they open the application, how keen you are, how well you look after the property, and that you've got an excellent rental history. With the amount of applications that people are seeing, the property managers aren't going to do that automatically, and something that stands out will always get their attention.
And what about the landlords, Emma?
For landlords, I think that a little bit more planning in really thinking through what their long-term strategy is with the property, and if they're thinking about selling perhaps in 12 months, having that conversation 12 months out, 6 months out. That way, as an agency, we can start to have those conversations with the tenant, start to understand whether they're going to stay or whether they're keen to move on, and whether we're able to do those things cooperatively with them. Also, if people are wanting to do renovations, whether we can help with them with that to keep that on track as well, and that might also affect the tenancy. So probably number one thing is just having those conversations earlier and having them in an open way so you know what options are available, and that property managers can give you proactive advice about the different steps you'll take leading up to perhaps sale or renewal of lease.
Property management is a very difficult task. I've been quite involved over time, and no one ever rings up and says, hello, I'm enjoying my property. When that phone rings, it's usually because there's a problem. So, Emma, well done to you and your team. How do we find Turner Real Estate? You've been in the game for a very long time as
yes,
an organisation.
Yeah, we are. We manage properties all over Adelaide in all price ranges. So we've got an office on Green Hill Road, which is central to everywhere. So we're at 49 Green Hill Road, and you can contact us on 8468 1000 or turnerrealestate.com.au.
Thank you for joining us on the podcast today, Emma.
Thanks so much, Kerry.
And thank you for listening and engaging with our community conversations today. Every week, we aim to bring you stories from far and wide across South Australia and beyond. People who are game changers in our community, doing great work, plus general topics of community interest. If you have any subjects you think we should cover or any other feedback, please let us know at communitycentressa.asn.au, and feel free to share this podcast so we can engage more people in our next community conversation.
Community Conversations with Community Centres SA. Here's Kerry Ackermans.